This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Casey Johnson, joined today by all-star center Nikola Vucevic. Coming up on the show, Nikola and I will get into his upbringing in a basketball family, what role Tim Floyd played in his recruitment to USC, and his prospects and expectations for this Bulls season.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
All right, so one of the cool things about being back in person from a media standpoint is we get the opportunity to get to know people a little bit better. It's hard to do over Zoom. And along those lines, we are pleased to be joined on the Bulls Talk podcast by Nikola Vucevic, all-star center for the Chicago Bulls. Vuce, can I call you Vuce?
Yeah, of course. That's what most people call me.
I know. First of all, how are you doing?
Doing good. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. I kind of wanted to start, let Bulls fans kind of get to know you a little bit off the court and also kind of your background in basketball. You come from a very important basketball family. I mean, both your parents played professionally and your brother-in-law also is a professional basketball player. So maybe talk a little bit about your upbringing, and you're a multicultural and continent guy too. So talk about kind of how you got involved in basketball and your family influence on that.
Oh yeah. So definitely come from a big basketball family. So I was born in Switzerland. My dad played professionally there. Then I moved to Belgium, where he continued his career after that. He started playing, although before, it was still in the ex-Yugoslavia since 78, 9. And then, so he played until he was 44 years old, for a very long time. So I got to, obviously watch him for a long time. But yeah, so he played, my mom played until she got pregnant with my sister. Then she stopped her career after that. And then my dad played until I was 11. So obviously, I grew up watching him, and that's kind of what got me to the game, because I wanted to be like him. I used to go to his practices, his games. I was just kind of obsessed with it, and that's all I did all day. I had a little hoop in my hallway, and I was always playing and wearing his gear. At that time, the Bulls were obviously dominating the NBA, and so huge MJ fan. My dad, his team was a Nike team, so they were getting a lot of stuff, and he was able to get me a lot of Bulls gear, so it kind of came naturally. And then so I grew up around it. I always wanted to be like him. And then so that's kind of how I came. He never really forced me to do it. He never did anything like that, which I think is good, because when you try to force things upon, especially kids, it works the other way around, and they kind of don't really like it anymore. So it was always kind of letting me do my thing. And then once I got to 12, 13, and he saw that I was talented, he decided to have a more hands-on approach and really, work with me and teach me and push me a little more at that time. But that's where I was more mature and was more aware of things, and knew it was the only way. But at a very young age, it was very just letting me play. I mean, I played all kinds of different sports, with my friends and stuff. Like, I played a lot. I love soccer too. I just was never really good at it, so I never gave it a shot. And I was always really tall. But it was just, it just came naturally. And so that's kind of I got into it. But also my uncle, he's a coach. He played. My father's brother, he played. He was a coach for a long time. He actually just retired this past year. And then my wife's brother, he played actually in the NBA. He got drafted by Utah. Then he went to the Cavs. The Cavs went to the finals. So he played with LeBron for 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
Then he switched a couple teams. So he's retired now as well. But yeah, so definitely a lot of basketball in our family.
His name is?
Sasha Pavlovic.
Yeah, of course. So yes, I knew that. I think most
people would probably do remember him.
Yeah, yeah. So you didn't feel pressure because your parents handled it the right way, but what was it like kind of growing up in different cultures and bouncing around because of your father's professional career?
Well, I think it was, at times it was definitely hard because, you go to one school, for example, then you switch schools or things like that. You meet a group of friends and you go to a different school. You have to make new friends and things like that. But I think Looking at it back now, it helped me being able to adapt to a new situation easier. But it gave me, I mean, so much opportunity to, you know, to live in Belgium. I learned French. You know, I was around a lot of different cultures because you're French. You know, even in Belgium, you have, you know, people from all over the world. Like in my class, you know, I grew up with people that, you know, European, people from Africa, people from Asia, from everywhere. So
yeah.
I think at that young age, when you're surrounded by that, it's great for you to grow up around different cultures, different people, you know, gives you, you know, great education about all those different people and different races and different cultures. So at that age, you don't realize it necessarily, but as you grow up, I think you're more aware of it. So it was really great for me to grow up. And then Belgium was great. We had a great time there. And then I moved to Montenegro when I was 12. We lived there for 4 years. And when I turned 16, I came to the U.S. So it really was all over the place. You know, in Belgium, we lived in three different cities. So I went to the three different schools, you know, met different people. And, you know, by switching basketball, because in Europe, you play for clubs. You don't play for a school basketball.
Right.
So I played for three, four different clubs. So you meet people there, too. So it's always, I mean, it's, for beginning, it's a little harder because you have to meet new people. But it's also good that you go through that and then you get to meet new people. You get adjusted to that. And actually, it's funny now, when I went back to Belgium a couple of years ago, you know, I ran into some people that remember that I played with them a long time ago. They remember me, they saw me somewhere, and they approached me and tell me, hey, we played on that team a long time ago. So now wherever I go, I feel like I know so many people because of that opportunity.
Very cool. I wanted to explore a little bit about what you said when you came to the States for your senior year of high school, because I talked to Nikola Mirotic about this one time, and I know you know him. We're going to get into that a little bit too, but you know, that's no small thing to, you know, he went off to Madrid at 15, I believe. And I remember talking to him about how difficult that was to go to a new culture. You don't really know the language. You don't know many people. You're leaving your family behind. It's a big commitment while you're also trying to play basketball at a high level. So explain to our listeners why you chose to come to the States for your senior year of high school. And did you have some difficult moments when you were over here?
So it was a kind of a turning point for me at that age. Do I want to go to a team, like a bigger team in Europe where, you know, I eventually turn pro and then, you know, play there? Or, you know, the other option was, it was through a mutual friend that did it. He ended up going to UCLA. Go that route, you know, give myself some more time to kind of play with, you know, my group of age, continue to go to school and see what happens. You know, I knew I was talented, but, you know, that only means so much. You know, there's so much that goes into it. So we looked at, you know, all kinds of different options at that time when I was 16. And then a coach from the school I ended up going to, Stornish Prep, he's originally from Senegal, but he worked in France, and he saw me play. And also through my uncle, who's a coach in France, they got in contact, and so he ended up, you know, asking me to come to play for Stonebridge for a year. And my initial thought was, go for a year, you know, try it out, see how I do, how I like it, you know, and then if it works out, you know, great. Hopefully I find a scholarship. If not, I can always go back to Europe. So I end up going to Stonebridge, and then after that, I get a scholarship. I go to USC. But it was definitely hard. I mean, at that time, you know, internet was kind of just starting to become a big thing. You know, you kind of had a MSN Messenger. You had all these, like, little things. I think the T-Mobile Sidekick had just came out in BlackBerry. So it wasn't like today where you have, you know, iMessage, WhatsApp, Instagram, FaceTime, everything. You have, I mean, even then, like, you didn't have just internet everywhere on your phone like you did, but it was, like, very limited. And so it wasn't like today where wherever you go, you can just pick up your phone, call whoever you want. So it was very different at that time. Like, and even like the house I lived in, the Wi-Fi was like the family. They only let us use Wi-Fi like certain times an hour and everything. So it was very different. So, but it was definitely tough. So my dad came with me the first 2 weeks to make sure everything, I got settled and all that. And then I think it didn't really hit me that I was going until he left. And once he left, it really hit me. And it was hard at times. I mean, you know, if things don't go well, you get homesick. You just, you know, it's just you and you're 16. Like, you don't know as much. But, I mean, at that time, well, sure, it was hard. There were times where I wanted to go back, and then I would call my parents, like, in the middle of the night. And my dad would be, like, 3 a.m. talking to me, like, all right, like, it's fine. You'll get through it. Just fight through it. It's fine. It was just a rough time, this and that. And so, eventually, obviously, you know, it all worked out. But I think that all that just helped me kind of grow as a person, mature more quickly, because I just had to, you know, and I had to learn things that I never had to do before, like, you know, make food or, like, do my laundry or fold my clothes or make, like, things like that I never did before, like travel on my own, go to the airport to leave the U.S. to go back home, things like that. And so when you're just you, you know, it's nothing, like, crazy, but when it's just you, you have to figure it on the go and have to figure things out. And you know, I think it's just human nature to figure it out, the natural instinct to just kind of, I just have to do it. So it helped me really mature at a really young age. And I think it's really helped me become the player I am, because I really had a big focus on, you know, I'm doing this because I want to make it, you know, as a basketball player. And that was my main focus. So at that young age, I was really, really, really focused on it. And so I think it's just all those experiences just helps you get through, you know, some difficult times, but you make it through, you come out stronger out of it, and then it's an experience going forward. When you go through it again, you know how to deal with it.
For sure. And I brought up Mirotić. So, can you tell our listeners about your kind of past with him? I mean, it's pretty amazing how long you guys have known each other, right?
Yeah, so we actually know each other from when we were like 12. So he played for a team in Montenegro. It was like separated in like three divisions, kind of like, so the north, middle, and south. And my city, my club, we were in the south. He was kind of the middle, and there was a north. And then so first you played as a team from the south. He played team, and then eventually, you know, the top teams, they mix and play against each other. So, you know, his team's one of the best in that his region. Mine was one of the best in my region. And so we would play like in a lot of the like final fours, you know, like the semifinals, right, final games. There was also like some summer camps where we'd play against each other. So we played against each other for a lot of times at that age until he ended up going to Madrid. So like we knew of each other. We spoke a little bit, but didn't know each other like, you know, really personally. And then when he went to Madrid, I think I maybe ran into him once or twice in Montenegro sometime randomly. And then I think we didn't really see each other until he came to the Bulls and I was with the Magic, and then we connected again. But it was just interesting to see how, you know, we both started there, and then, and we went two different routes. He went to Spain, I went to U.S., and then we ended up coming again here and meeting. So I think it's special for, you know, a small country like Montenegro, only has 600,000 people,
right,
to have, you know, it wasn't only the two of us, but from that generation to have been in the NBA, and you had all these other players too. So it was special just, you know, be able to reconnect, play on the court again. I know he played for Spain for his national team, but no, he was from Montenegro, so it was special for us to be able to, and then talk about how we played against each other before and all that. It was interesting.
Yeah. So
we did win. I think we always beat them, by the
there
way.
There you
too,
go. So. Talk some smack that to Nico, man. He can handle it. I remember having a conversation with him once, back in when we were in the locker rooms, back in those days when we were in the locker rooms.
The good old days.
Yeah. Pre-game, just casually, I just was casually talking to him because I had a good relationship with him, and I said, I see you going back to Europe one day. And he just looked at me and he was totally taken aback, because I think in the back of his head, I think he always knew he was going to go back. And look, he's tearing it up out there. Yeah, it's true. A great decision for him and his family. But I wanted to ask you real quick before we move on to another subject. There was just that general manager survey that comes out every year through NBA.com. And general managers were asked to pick the best player in the world, not in the NBA. And Nico won the poll. Would you agree? I'm putting you on the spot here. He's pretty darn good.
I think he definitely
up there,
so he could be he's for sure an NBA player. I think so. Yeah, I think. I mean, I don't know of all, but I think so. Like not NBA player, best non NBA player in the world.
Yeah,
I think he definitely could. I mean, he's been the best player in the EuroLeague since he's been there three years now. So I want to say for sure. Yeah. He could play in the NBA, and I think it was a surprise for people when he decided, because I heard he had some good offers here. He needs to go, but I think
he was about to sign with Utah.
That's true. Yeah, he was. So I think it ended up being a good decision for him. And, you know, I think because he did get traded a couple of times. And so I think it was pretty difficult for him a little bit. And he probably wanted to get some stability for his family. I mean, you know, Barcelona is a great city, great club. You know, I was surprised that he go to Barcelona since he was a Real Madrid kid. There's a huge rivalry there.
Right.
So I was surprised with that decision. But it worked out perfectly for him. You know, they have a very good team. You know, it works out for him well. So it's good.
One other ex-Bull or guy with Bulls ties we need to explore your relationship with, Tim Floyd. Was he like the main person who recruited you to go USC, or how did that work?
So no, actually he didn't really get involved much in my recruitment until kind of towards the end. So he was so early on it was this one of the assistant coaches, Gib Arnold. He was huge on European guys. He loved European players, and so once he saw me at Stone Ridge, he like wanted me no matter what, and he kept recruiting me. But it was never I think very few people know this, but they're like, USC, they wanted me, but it wasn't like, I think they were looking at all kinds of different guys, so they were still debating. And so like I wasn't getting any like, you know, offer or anything, you know, from them official. So Nevada, Reno, I only got recruited by a couple schools because I was only there for a year. We actually didn't play as many games as we were supposed to, some sponsor thing that whatever. But so Nevada, Reno comes and they really come high on me and they recruit me to take me to a visit. So it's my first visit. I'm like, you know, wowed by, you know, the campus, this, like, everything they take me, and all the guys that are there that talk to me, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, this is awesome. I want to go there, you know. So, like, I verbally commit to going there. And so today I'm supposed to get my papers to sign. Like, they call me, and they're like, hey, we hear there's these things about Nevada Arena. I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking of going there. And like, so they're like, wait, but we want you. And I'm like, I never, you know, had an official offer. So I end up, you know, like, going back in the process and kind of waiting to kind of decide again. So that's when Tim Floyd got involved, and he was coming to practices, because it was like 60 miles from LA. So he came and watched us practice, and then I went on a visit to USC and this and that. And then, so I ended up deciding to go to USC. You know, I wanted to, obviously, Nevada Arena probably would have been, you know, a play right away, have more opportunity, but USC had a better team, better conference. And I think also what happened is, as I stayed, you know, kind of in the process longer, I was able to learn more about different schools, the process, what it meant, you know, the Pac-10 compared to, I think it was in the WAC, Nevada Arena was in the WAC or whatever. Yeah. So it was just kind of learn, because I didn't know, coming from Europe, I didn't know all these schools other than like the top 10 schools maybe in America. I just didn't know how it was, the NCAA. So end up deciding to go to USC, but it was later on that he came in and recruited me. And then obviously, like, my first year, he was there freshman year. You know, he had a big impact on me. I mean, great coach. I mean, taught us a lot. And DeMar was there as well with us. Yeah. But definitely one of those old school, you know, hard-nosed coaches. But I really liked playing with him. He was great. He helped me a lot. I ended up actually playing, you know, at the beginning I didn't play much, and I ended up actually, like, being the backup center to Taj Gibson, who was here as well with the Bulls. Yeah. So it was a good freshman year, but he left after my freshman year, so only had him for a year.
Right. I know Kevin O'Neill too, but I covered Tim's Bulls stint here, and obviously, you know, Bulls fans, I mean, I don't think anybody could have won in those circumstances, but Bulls fans have a kind of one perception of Tim, but he's a hell of a college coach.
Yeah, he's
and
a great coach.
And also, he had success with the Hornets after he left here.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's hard, you know, think, you know, as fans' perspective, you know, you don't always know everything that's going on, you know, within the team, within, you know, everything. Sometimes it just doesn't work out. But, I mean, in my opinion, I know he helped me a lot, and I think DeMar, you know, would say the same, or Taj. I think he's, you know, a very good coach, and, you know, he taught us a lot, and he coached us a lot with kind of NBA style things. So it helps you when you transition to the NBA, like, for example, on defense, like the things we're doing defensively, or like the calls we're using when you get, then you're already familiar with it. And it was the same with Kevin O'Neill, like, it was a lot of NBA stuff. So when you get here, you already know, you know, like, hey, this is what we call this pick and roll coverage on the side or in the middle. So, you know, it's not just, you know, it's not like you're just thrown in there. You had no idea once you get to the NBA. So I enjoyed playing with him, and he was definitely tough on us, and it was enjoyable to play for him.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You've mentioned your Bulls fandom, and, you know, it's I've talked to you about this before, but you had that remarkable moment on Zoom last year where it's one of the first times we're talking to you after the trade, and you see Sam Smith, my former colleague at the Chicago Tribune, and a very dear friend of mine, and you're like, hey, are you Sam Smith? Are you the one who wrote There Is No Next? And, you know, it was such a cool moment for me, because I'm, you know, Sam is like a mentor to me, and it just showed your appreciation for history of the game and also your Bulls fandom, et cetera. How were you consuming those games over there? Were they coming on tape delay? Were you getting up in the middle of the night and watching them? Were you just getting stuff? I guess the internet wasn't really even around when you were a little kid.
Maybe it just started or something. Yeah, but it definitely wasn't on the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, so there was, I feel really old when I say these things, but there was a satellite, and you know, you start like TV through satellite. So we had that, and we had NBA TV.
Yeah.
And then, or like some channels in Europe had like NBA, I think it was called NBA Extra or something. NBA Action, it was called. There was like a, just a, like every Sunday or something at certain hours, it was NBA Action, and they just kind of gave us a weekly kind of report of, you know, the games and, you know, top 10 and all that. And then the NBA TV, sometimes they'd play, yeah, but I never in the middle of the night, it was always like the next day I'd watch and follow. And then, you know, it was in a newspaper, you'd follow, like obviously the Bulls were in a worldwide phenomenon. So yeah, yeah, every TV you turned on, if they talk about basketball, you know, they talk, mainly talked about the Bulls. So it's just kind of how I didn't really get a chance to watch as many games as probably, but, you know, highlights and maybe if they showed a replay or something. So I always watched that. And then they did have like NBA Hardwood Classics on NBA TV. So I watched a lot of the like 80s, 90s, later on, like when we got to 2000, a lot of those games, you know, a replay that I watched. And just growing up, then the more access I had, the more games I watched and things like that. But then I had this VCR tape that it was a Michael Jordan airtime. Yeah. I think it was for the 91-2 season.
Yeah.
I watched that over like 50 times for sure. Like if I watched it now, I wouldn't know exactly like the words he's saying, what action is going on, everything. Like it was really, yeah.
So two questions. Have you ever met him?
I have, yes, actually, in my workout when it was still a Charlotte Bobcats, for when I was going through a draft process. So okay, we were working out there, and then he walked into the room, like the gym, I mean, and the whole place just went like silent. We just all turned, and like he walked in. And he was just like, guys, keep going. So we finished our workout. And after workout, he came up to everybody. And he came up to me. And actually, he was talking to me about my face-up game, how I think I should use more of my pump fake and do this and that, my footwork. And I was just like, wow. I was listening to him, but I don't think I just registered at all because it was just like, he's MJ's talking to me. So, I mean, even now, like, I saw him once at a game when we were playing Charlotte. He was sitting there. And even now, like, you see him. He just has, you know, that presence when he walks somewhere that he's just, you know, people are just going to be wild by it.
For sure. He's got an aura. Yeah, I mean there's no exactly getting around it. I mean, we felt it as reporters. Yeah, so I covered that second three-peat, and I was very young in my career, and, you know, I'm there to do a job, but even I would sometimes have a moments where you could just feel that aura around him. He just has it. So, yeah. So what is it like to play for the team that you, I mean, obviously you had such pride playing for, getting drafted by Philly and, you know, developing into an all-star in Orlando, so you have pride there. But what is it like playing for the Chicago Bulls, knowing how big of a global brand they were growing up and your fandom of them?
Yeah, I mean, it's big. I mean, for me, even when I like played for the Magic or my first year in Philly, every time we came here, it was always special because, you know, the United Center, and then you see the banners, you see the retired jerseys. And then I'm a huge fan of the intro, which is, you know, legendary. And I think a lot of players are, like, they love the intro. And so all that, and I think for me it was more special just because I grew up, you know, being a fan of all that. So you get to be part of it, you know. It's so, for example, you know, like some guys that are a little older, maybe for them it's more like the 80s Lakers or it'll be like the, you know, Celtics because they grew up. So for me it was just like a lot, just Chicago, the Bulls, and it was that time. So you grew up around it. And so it was special. So for me to, you know, be here now, especially even when I came here and then you see like the jerseys retire, like they have pictures and things like that, it's special. It has a special feel. I think you kind of feel as a kid just seeing that and then remembering that you watched all that and was a fan. So it just has a special feel. It's just, you know, obviously, and then you're Chicago and one of the best franchises in the NBA historically. So there, I think there's just something special about being able to represent them for sure. And then the fans here, you know, they're really into the Bulls and they really know the game. So just a different feel.
Just a couple more, and we appreciate your time because now we've got a PR person hovering on the Bulls Talk podcast. I'm just kidding. So obviously you guys, you know, I'm not holding you up to the dynasty level, but talk a little bit about this season and the excitement. I know we talked to you on Media Day. Just, it really does seem like there's something building here and something special about this season. So how good can you guys be?
I think it's hard to say, you know, how good we can be or to put like a number of wins or how far we can go. I think we definitely have, you know, the potential to be a really good team, you know, to do something special. But it's really up to us. It depends on how much work we're willing to put in, you know, how much we're willing to give up to make this work. And so it's going to be a process, not just going to, you know, happen for us. It's not given. It's not going to be easy. We're going to go through up and downs. But I think you need those to become the team we want to be. And but we definitely have a lot of talented players. We have guys with experience, guys that played in, you know, championship teams, that play deep playoff runs. So, and we're very versatile. So I think we have all the pieces needed. We just have to make it work, and that's on us as players to do that.
You and Zach formed some decent chemistry, although it was a little disjointed with Zach going in the health and safety protocols last year. You've known DeMar forever. I like what Zach said on media day. This is no like veteran leader guy coming in. This dude's still in the prime of his career. I mean, he's averaged over 20 points a game in 8 straight seasons. You've known DeMar a long time. What was it like playing against him as an opponent, and what is it like to have him as a teammate now?
Yeah, it was, I mean, for sure, you know, he's still at the top of his game. You know, I mean, he's a veteran by his years. I mean, 13 years in the NBA, you become a veteran, but, you know, not a veteran where he's just out there. You know, he's definitely, you know, still, you know, a great player and still has a huge impact on the game. But I think it's great for us to have him, just because of his experience. You know, he played, you know, obviously with Toronto, he went to so many, you know, deep player runs. They were the best team in the league, so he knows what it takes. But for me personally, I think it's special because we did play together at USC as freshmen. I mean, obviously, he was a big star already then. I was just, you know, happy to be there. But it's good to be then on a team again, you know, with him now. And then just playing against him over the years, obviously, we were in the East both. I mean, they're obviously really good with Toronto. With Orlando, we weren't as good, but we always had battles. It was, you know, one of the toughest teams to play, and he was, you know, really, you know, dominant at the time. You know, he was one of the best players in the NBA, and it was really difficult to play against him. And you know, we always, you know, would talk and things like that, and we mentioned about playing together. And obviously, at that time, it was realistic, as you know, the situation we're in, but. And once the opportunity came up, you know, we talked about it more seriously. I'm glad we were able to make it happen. So it's great for me to have, you know, another, you know, USC Trojan here. But also, I think it's great for the team because he's a hell of a player.
And what are your personal expectations for yourself this season?
For me personally, honestly, it's just, you know, just trying to help the team in, you know, as many ways as I can to get to where we want to get. You know, which, you know, the initial goal is the playoffs, and then go from there. But I mean, I think that, you know, most individual things come from having team success. You know, it's hard to do it when the team doesn't have success. So I'm not big on setting individual goals as far as, you know, averages or anything like that. I just, you know, try to go out there, play my game, and do the best that I can. And so it's kind of, you know, honestly been my thoughts going into every season. You know, obviously, you know, as the season goes on, you see how things go, you know, maybe certain things that you can achieve, but nothing that I really said that I really want to achieve too much. You know, I just really want to play. And then I think this season also specific because it's a very new team. So we're trying to figure out. And I think also some of us as players will have to, you know, sacrifice certain things to make this thing work.
For sure. And I want to end with some off the court stuff because just, you know, getting to know you from afar and reading about you and then watching your social media and stuff like that. By the way, I was at a concert on Tuesday and people were talking and it didn't make me happy. So.
Oh,
that's an inside joke that we can talk about later. You seem like a guy who's got a lot of interests. You seem very family oriented. And you're in your soccer, you mentioned before, Formula One racing. Is that true?
Yes,
as
yep,
well? So,
yep.
So what do you like to do outside of basketball?
Well, right now, I mean, I like to do a lot of things, and I like to, when I'm, you know, done with practice or games, you know, once I, you know, kind of, you know, finish that, and if I have to watch film or something, and once I'm done with all that, I like to really get away from it, you know, kind of, especially now that I have, you know, my family, my wife and kids, you know, make sure, you know, I spend time with them. So I mean, a lot of the stuff that I do now is, you know, with them, because I'm gone a lot, you know. Even when we're here, you know, practice days, you know, I leave the house at 8:39, then I don't come back until like 2-3. So a lot of stuff falls on my wife, and then so when I get there, I try to help her a lot. And then when we travel, especially when we're going on road trips, so, and also, you know, I, you know, that's the thing I enjoy the most now, just being with my kids, especially now they're my son, he's going to be almost 3, so he's more aware of it, and we, you know, we spend a lot of quality times, and it's like just a lot of positive energy for me to be around them. So I try to do that as much as I can, spend time with them, you know, take him to the park or, you know, to a playground or whatever, just do things. And then outside of that, I mean, I love reading. I'm a big reader, so I try to read at night before I go to bed. It calms me down and, you know, makes me, you know, fall asleep nicely. I like other sports, like you mentioned, like soccer, Formula One. I'm a big football fan as well now that I've been living here for a long time, so I enjoy that as well. Outside of that, my other hobbies, some things that I'm a big foodie, so I love, you know, I love going to restaurants, trying different foods. I love traveling. But I'm, you know, very kind of, you know, low-key guy, you know, just kind of try to do things on my own with, like, my group of people, my, you know, family, things like that. So nothing, you know, crazy, but I do like, you know, trying different things, learning new things, just to get my mind away from basketball. Obviously, you know, now with kids, I don't have as much time to do all that. But, you know, I try to, you know, do different things. So, and also I think it's important that, you know, obviously my number one thing is outside of my family is basketball. And whatever that I do outside of it, it cannot affect, you know, my game. Like I can't stay up late watching or playing video games or something, knowing that I have practice or game the next day. Like I make sure that everything that I do outside of it doesn't affect basketball. Like that's number one priority. And then after I'm done with that, then I can do other things as well. So same in the summer when I'm off season, you know, a lot of my time is organized around my workouts, around me getting ready for a new season.
Sure.
So if I do travel, if I do other things, it's all to make sure that doesn't, you know, get affected. But yeah, I like to do different things just to keep in mind a way to kind of refresh yourself. I think as you get older, you understand it's important to do that because, you know, it can be a lot, the whole, you know, basketball thing is daily, you know, and then wherever you go, people also recognize you and, you know, they want to talk to you. And so, you know, all that is great, but at times you just want to get away. So that's why at times I just like to kind of shut off and do my own thing.
You get recognized a lot at the playground?
I do. What doesn't help me, I'm 7 feet tall, so even if people don't necessarily know exactly who I am, you know, they ask me, and I'm like, "Are you, you're tall?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I know." And then, like, that's the thing that kills me, is like, when it comes to me, and like, "You're tall," and I'm like, "I know that." Like, I mean, I've seen myself, and they're like, or if they ask me at least how tall I am, then it's like, okay. But even then, it's like, what do they do with that information? Like, what do they, like, 6'11", they're like, okay, that's cool. My, and then a lot of times I get the, yeah, my neighbor's son, he's 6'7", and I'm like, good for him. Like,
great.
Yeah, so, I don't know, maybe for people it's like, but I don't know. But anyways, but they, so yeah, I do. And then obviously, you know, they want to take pictures or they want to, you know, like talk to me about it. And I understand it's part of being an NBA player and a lot of, you know, it's just part of it and you have to deal with it. And for the most part, I've never had any issues with it. It's just, you know, sometimes, like, it's funny, sometimes when I take pictures with people, like my son, he'll be like, he'd like be pushing me, like, no, like, you can't do that, like, we got to play. So it's funny now to see how, you know, it annoys him a little bit, but it's part of it. And then a lot of, obviously, it's just, you know, part of being a professional athlete that people don't recognize.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of great things come with it, so can't complain.
For sure. And lastly, I just saw you gave an interview with some magazine, and you talked about how fatherhood has changed you. It seems like you're pretty into the gig, huh?
No, it's great. I mean, it's really hard to explain, I mean, how, you know, the feeling of having a kid and when he was, you know, first born and everything. It's just there's just, you know, it's kind of, you kind of watch your, like, it's kind of your, not really yourself, but like it's something that's really yours, and that, you know, it's on you to, like, make sure, you know, he grows up the right way, that you teach him the right things, that, you know, he grows up to be a good, you know, human being at the end. That's the most important, and whatever he does. But it's, you know, so important even at a young age. You think, you know, earlier, well, once he gets to 6, 7, that's when you really have to kind of teach him. But it's really at a young age that you teach him all these things. And so it just changes you. Like when he was born, it just changed me automatically for some reason. And the perspective on things, the things you care that much about before, maybe now they don't really matter as much because you have, you know, your kids, and then, you know, your time now, you know, you, everything you do is, you know, how is it going to affect them? You know, if you want to travel, let's make sure, you know, it's not too much. So, or
right. Things
like that. So, it just changes your whole perspective on life, but it's just the greatest thing, seeing them grow up, learn new things, you know, even like when, like, their first teeth comes out and you're like, oh, like, he got a tooth. And then, like, he learns to walk. And then now my older, he's talking. And then now, you know, you got to watch what you're saying around him because you repeat stuff. And so, you know, I have a terrible habit when I drive, you know, to say things. And so now I drive, I say something, and like 2 days later, like his toy would like fall out of his hands or something. He would like curse. And I'm like, wait, well, hold up, where did you hear that? And so I can't get mad because I know he heard me. So I'm trying to explain to him. So just all these little things like that is amazing. Now he watched my game once, and since then he's been obsessed with basketball. That's all he does. He wants to play. He wants to wear, like, my stuff. Like, he'll wear my jersey, my shoes, and just walk around the house. So it's just, like, it's special to see that, you know, just him, somebody just idolizing you the way he does. And then now my younger, he's a year, so he's getting close to that. So watching them now play together, spend time together, it's just so enjoyable and so fun to do, and it's special. So, you know, it's something I'm really looking forward to. Hopefully is you know, as they get older and they retire, and hopefully they decide to play some type of sport, you know, and then, you know, I can go to games and watch them and be part of it. Something I'm really looking forward to.
For sure. And you mentioned before how your job inherently takes you away from your family. So along those lines, you're talking to me instead of being with your family, so we can end this talk right now.
But no,
we do want to really appreciate your time on the Bulls Talk podcast, and go enjoy your family and have a good season. And thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.